study in the book of Ecclesiastes. And first of all, we're going to correct an oversight of mine last time. Last time I said we were finished with chapter 9 and we went ahead and did chapter 10, but I had actually forgotten the second half of chapter 9. So we're going to do that today, and then we'll move on to chapter 11. So the second half of Ecclesiastes chapter 9 is really a separate thought than the first 10 verses. And it starts in verse 11, goes through verse 11 through 18. We're going to read that whole section, and then we're going to dive in. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill. But time and chance happen to them all. For a man does not know his time. Like a fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time, when it falls suddenly upon them. This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, and besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he, by his wisdom, delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise quietly spoken should be heard, rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. And we can see here that there's at least two clear sections here. The first, verses 11 and 12, talking about the future and chance. And then the second, 13 through 18, which talks about this situation with the city and the poor wise man. So verse 11, I returned and saw under the sun. So he's changing his thoughts here a little bit. He says, I returned and saw under the sun that, so he's talking about life on earth, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Hold on a second. I thought the swiftest one won the race, and the strongest win in battle. It says, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill. But time and chance happen to them all. So first of all, there's a bit of hyperbole here in that obviously if you have a race, the fastest runner very often wins. And if you have a battle, usually the strongest wins. But the key here is usually, this is not always true. There are all kinds of situations where I remember, I can't remember the name of the woman, but she was a world-class American runner. And in one of the Olympics, she was supposed to just blow everybody away. She'd been winning year after year, race after race. She was the clear favorite. And during that race, one of the runners from a different country who was not a great runner, but of course in the Olympics, you know, you're the best runner in your country, no matter how good you are in the rest of the world. And that woman got in front of her and they were running really close together. And of course they had racing spikes on and she ended up spiking this great runner. So when she was kicking her leg up, she caught her leg and it made her fall. And this great runner who was so much better than everybody lost the race. And it was just one of those weird quirks. You know, that's what we would say. It says, boy, that's a strange thing that happened. A little unusual, you know, twist of fate or something like that. And that's exactly what Solomon's talking about here. Even though most of the time the swift is going to win the race, the strong is going to win the battle, and riches is going to go to men of understanding, and there's going to be favor to men of skill, it's not always going to happen. And he says, but time and chance happen to them all. For a man does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. How many times have you heard the phrase, there I was minding my own business when suddenly something happened, right? This is exactly what he's talking about. Like fish taken in a net. Do fish know that there's a net out there? No, they're just swimming along. They're just swimming along, minding their own business. They're just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and wham, they're in the net. So there's an aspect of what Solomon's talking about here that we've heard over and over so far in Ecclesiastes, which is what happens in the future is not for man to know. God knows. but man does not. And we're going to see some more of this later. But there's another aspect of this that I want to focus on. This verse at the end of chapter, verse 11, but time and chance happen to them all. You know, sometimes people will take this verse and they take it out of context and they say, everything's random. There's no purpose in it. It's random. And in fact, a lot of modern scientific theory that's based on the notion of quantum physics will make arguments like this. It says, nope, you can't ever tell what's going to happen. It's all completely random. Now, what's wrong with that philosophy? If everything's completely random, then what does that mean? God doesn't know either, does he? And of course, we know that's not true. And all through Ecclesiastes, Solomon says, hey, God does know. In fact, he's the only one that knows. Now, the interesting point is how do we understand this phrase? Time and chance happen to them all. And we were just talking about, I was minding my own business, but I ended up being in the wrong place at the wrong time and things like that, right? Now, if I knew and I kept it a secret that tomorrow at 9:23 a.m., I would go down and break into the BB&T in Rutherford. And I knew that. I was going to do that. But no one else knew that. And all of a sudden, you were there. And all of a sudden, I walked up and broke into the bank. You'd say, whoa, what happened there? That's the strangest thing because you know me. I'm not going to go break into a bank. But see, I knew it. I knew it ahead of time. And God's that way. God understands. He knows when things are happening. Just because we don't know things are happening don't mean they're random. And we're going to talk a little more about this because this is actually a very important concept in understanding God's omnipotence and his omniscience. Omniscience means he's all-knowing, and omnipotence means that he's all-powerful. Now, Stephen did an excellent lesson this last Sunday night, and in fact, it's going to show up in the Rutherford Weekly this week, if you happen to get out and see it, on the nature of free will, and is God really in control? And it does a good job of explaining that, and I'm not going to go through it here. I definitely recommend it to you. But here, you know, throughout Ecclesiastes, Solomon has said, God's laws and his providence happen to everyone. Does the rain fall on the evil and the good? Sure enough. Does the sun rise on the evil and the good? Sure does. Is it possible for a righteous man to undergo evil and misfortune? Yep. Is it possible for a wicked man to be blessed and be wealthy and live a long life? Yes, it's possible. These are effects of God's laws and providence. But let's think about this a little bit. You know, Einstein, I don't generally quote Einstein when I'm teaching Bible, but Einstein really had a problem with this modern quantum theory because he said, God doesn't play dice with the universe. You know, and Einstein isn't always the person you want to quote in religious matters. He had some views that I wouldn't agree with, and I don't think the Bible agrees with. But the statement that he made is one that people think about. If God is really in control, is there such a thing as random chance? And so I thought I'd look a little bit of how that shows up in the scripture. This word that's translated chance in the New King James actually is also translated occurrence or happening. It's the word pega in Hebrew. And you could also translate it as things happen or events happen. So it's not necessarily saying a random thing. It's just saying stuff happens. Things do happen that you don't understand, that you're not predicting and that you're not planning for, and things surprise you and they happen. And I think that's probably a better rendering of the verse, and here's why. I'm going to show you some scriptures here. We're going to talk about this notion of random choice. And there's a fascinating aspect of this, which is because to the human, what happens in the future is unpredictable. It demands that we trust God. What would it be like if you knew exactly, if you could pull out your calculator or computer and calculate every single thing that was going to happen in the future for as long as you wanted to calculate it? That's what some scientists have said about the world. They don't believe in God. They believe it's all physics. And they say, well, you know, if I knew when the Big Bang started and I knew the position of every molecule in the universe and I knew all the laws of physics, which they think they pretty well do, although they keep getting surprised, then I'd be able to tell you which sparrow would fall and hit the ground at what time right now or 10,000 years from now. It wouldn't matter. I'm just calculating. Everything's determined. There is no randomness in the world. Well, this notion of unpredictability is in fact an element of God's plan. If we could predict everything that would happen in our lives and always be right, would we need to trust God? No, we wouldn't, because we could figure it out on our own. And what does Solomon say over and over and over in Ecclesiastes? No man knows. No man knows the hour of his death. Yes, there's a time and a season for everything, but man cannot see what is ahead of him. So let's look at some examples of what we would generally call random choices. So in Leviticus 16, if you remember when Stephen was teaching us in Leviticus, here it's talking about the atonement sacrifice. And in 16 verse 7, he's talking about Aaron, and he says, "And he shall take two goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Aaron shall cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. And Aaron shall bring the goat upon which the Lord's lot fell and offer him for a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make atonement for him and to let him go for a scapegoat into the wilderness." Now here you have a situation where someone brings two goats to Aaron for this ritual, and they cast lots. Now, lots in general, when they're talked about in the scripture, can be various kinds of things. We would think of them today sort of like dice, where whatever it is, whether it's a rock that has a color on one side or another, or a stick that has different markings on it at different sides, or whatever it is, it's a way of for human thinking anyway, to make. In Joshua 18, the same kind of approach was used to divide up the promised land. So in verse 8, "And the men rose and went away, and Joshua charged and go and walk through the land and describe it and come again to me that I may here cast lots for you before the Lord in Shiloh. And the men went and passed." Joshua had divided the land. He had cast lots, basically rolled dice, to decide which people got what parts of the promised land. So there's, again, an example of what we would say was a random choice. Like if you just got a pair of dice and rolled it and said, if it's a 5, I'm going to do this. If it's a 6, I'm going to do that. You'd say, I have no way, if it's a fair set of dice, I have no way of determining that myself. But let's look at another example. In 1 Samuel 14, verse 41, this is Saul, and this is after Jonathan and Saul had been in a situation where Jonathan had eaten some honey after Saul had said that no one was supposed to eat anything during a battle. So it says, "Therefore Saul said unto the Lord God of Israel, give a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken," because they cast lots, "but the people escaped. And Saul said, cast lots between me and Jonathan, my son. And Jonathan was taken." And the rest of the story is where Saul said, somehow or another, there's a problem here, and we got to find out what the cause is. And so they cast lots. But notice what he says. He asked God, give a perfect lot. In other words, give us a clear decision. And of course, God did. And after this verse, it says, "Jonathan, my son, what have you done?" And he said, "Hey, all I did was eat some honey." You know, but that's the situation. We know there's a situation. We hear about casting lots, if you think about that. It's actually a fulfillment of prophecy about Christ. When he died on the cross, the soldiers that crucified him took his garments, and they divided it among them, and it said the robe was of one piece, woven from top to the bottom, and they said, let's not tear it, let's cast lots for it, or basically roll dice or gamble for it. But then so those just seem like kind of random things, except where Saul asked God to give him a good decision, to give him a clear decision. We see a similar thing in Acts chapter 1. So this is the choosing of the apostle to replace Judas. And it says, Peter says that, you know, there must be one chosen from us who must be ordained to be a witness with us of his resurrection. And they appointed two, Joseph called Barsabbas, who was surnamed Justus, and Matthias. And they prayed and said, Thou Lord, which knowest the heart, sorry, this is King James, Thou Lord, which knowest the hearts of all men, show whether of each of these two thou hast chosen, that he may take part in this ministry from which Judas by transgression fell. And they gave forth their lots, and the lot fell upon Matthias, and he was numbered with the 11 apostles. So here you have a situation where some people say, oh, what they did is they voted, because it says they gave forth their lots. But that's not what lots were. Here, it's clearly not a vote. If it was a vote, why would they pray, God, you show us whom you have chosen? See, this is the same thing that Saul says when he says, give us a perfect lot, when they're trying to find out what the answer is. So here in both of these cases, we have Old Testament, we have New Testament, where they're praying and say, God, let us know your choice. So what does that mean? Time and chance happen to us all. Okay, I think the bottom line can be found in Proverbs 16, verse 33. The lot is cast into the lap, but it's every decision is from the Lord. Now that sounds pretty clear. That's Proverbs. That's Solomon. That's the same guy that wrote Ecclesiastes. He says the lot is cast into the lap. In modern language, we'd say the dice is cast into the lap, but it's every decision is from the Lord. Is God in control? Yeah, that's what the scripture says. Will we be able to say, hold it, can I roll a dice and tell you what it's going to be every single time? No, I can't tell you what it's going to be the next time. But God knows what it'll be. You see, God is ultimately in control, and he does know the future. But here, I think, is the way for us to understand that scripture. Time and chance happen to them all. It's something that we can't predict. And you'll see a little of this later when we get into the next chapter. So let's move on to verse 13. Now, Solomon tells this little story. He says, there's this wisdom I have also seen under the sun. You know, usually he says there's a great evil under the sun. But here he says, this wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it and besieged it and built great snares around it. Now, there was found in it a poor wise man, and by his wisdom he delivered the city, yet no one remembered that same poor man. So Solomon says, I saw the situation, a great king with a great army came up against this little city, and a poor man came out of the poor part of town and was wise, and he saved the city. But it says no one remembered that same poor man. Even after the crisis, when the crisis was over, everyone just still despised him because he was poor. He wasn't honored. So Solomon says in verse 16, then I said, so he's saying, okay, this is something he learned from that situation. Wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised and his words are not heard. Words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Now, in some ways, this kind of seems a little bit like some of these truisms we've seen in Proverbs, where they're just little independent statements, but I believe they're all talking about the same story here. So there was a small city that didn't have strength, that didn't have great weapons of war. In fact, it was wisdom that saved the city. And yet, even though the poor wise man saved the city, he was ignored afterwards. And so I think this all kind of comes together. Look at it this way. Wisdom is better than strength, and the words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard. And it's better than weapons of war. See, all those things fit together. Now listen to the other half of each of the verses. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. And his words are not heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. That sounds like the ruler of that city, doesn't it? The fool that wasn't going to honor the wise man, even though he saved his town. And then the second half of verse 18, wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. You can just see what happens. Why wasn't the wise man honored after saving his city? Was it the shout of ruler of fools? Was it one sinner, that ruler of fools, that destroyed much good, the wise man and what he did? It's very interesting to put those pieces together and try to picture the situation that Solomon had. Some of this is very related to what's in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. I think that's what you have here in this city. Even though the poor wise man saved them by his wisdom, he was despised. All right. Let's move on to chapter 11. Chapter 11 kind of starts, really the first six verses, we'll see if we can cover those, starts talking about a little, take some of the stuff about chance happening and things like that, but it starts weaving it together into a general piece of advice about, okay, if all of this is true, if you can't predict the future and you don't know what's going to happen and time and chance happens to us all, then what do you do? And it's kind of a concluding statement about how we should live our lives. I'll read the first six verses. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving to seven and also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. In the morning, sow your seed, and in the evening, do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Now, this is really a summary of wisdom on how to live your life. The first two verses, cast your bread upon the waters, for after you will find it after many days. Give a serving to seven and also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. Here in general, what this is saying is generosity is a good plan, is a good preparation for the future. When casting your bread on the waters doesn't mean throwing it, you know, if Art was here, he'd say, that's like chumming for fish. I could just see him saying that. He's on the phone here, so he might comment. But that's not what they're talking about. He's talking about offering, taking what you have, your bread, and spreading it out and letting others have it. Notice verse 2, give a serving to seven and also to eight. Be generous with what you have, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. So first of all, generosity is good preparation. Verse 3, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if a tree falls to the south of the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. Well, that sounds like, well, okay, duh. If the rain, the clouds are full, there's going to be rain somewhere. And if a tree falls, guess what? It's going to be on the ground where it lies. So while what Solomon is saying here, he's saying where there is cause and effect. We know that if the clouds are full, there is going to be rain. And if trees fall, they're going to fall. But the point is, we can't predict exactly when it's going to rain. And we can't predict when the tree is going to fall. Or if it's going to fall to the south or the north, but when it falls, it happens. There is a degree of prediction that we can make about our future. We know that one day we're going to die. We know that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. We know that if we don't eat, we're going to be hungry. There's all kinds of things that we can say we can predict about the future. But specifically, in detail, we really can't predict it. And that's what he goes to in verses 4 and 5. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. In other words, if you sit around going, okay, I'm going to wait for just the perfect time to sow my crop, guess what? You'll never get seed in the ground. And if you're looking at the clouds and going, man, I don't want to cut my wheat because if it rains on my wheat, it's going to mildew and my crop's not going to be good. No, he says, go get after it. We cannot predict everything. We got to trust God and get on with life. Verse 5, as you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. We can't predict everything in fine detail. So what do we do? In verse 6, he tells us, in the morning, sow your seed, and in the evening, do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, and whether both alike will be good. He's saying, yep. Yeah, we can't predict the future in detail. We don't know exactly what's going to happen tomorrow. But go ahead and plan and get after it. Get to work and trust God. You know, how many times did he say, do your work under the sun and reap the fruit and enjoy the fruit of your labor? He said, that's our job. That's our portion. So don't sit around saying, I'm going to wait for the perfect time. Get out and get after it. That's just really good, solid advice. Here at the end of chapter 11 is another little section that we have time for. It is really only a short chapter this time. It's only got 10 verses. But this really starts swinging into chapter 12. And really from chapter 7 all the way to the end is kind of Solomon's final admonition to the reader. Remember, this whole book is about wisdom. He said, I want to find out what's good on the earth, what's wise. I want to discover what's really worthwhile. Where's the profit in this world? And of course, what did he find? Vanity, vanity. Everything is vanity. The things that people say are important, wealth and pleasure, and building things and owning things and all that stuff, nope, it's empty. It's really empty. So, verse 7. Truly the light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. So he's telling the young man, he's saying, enjoy your life. Sure, but keep an eye on the future because God's going to bring you into judgment. And no matter how many years you live, there will be days of darkness. And there will be times when you say, it's empty. Okay, we have a few more minutes here, and I'm going to keep, since this context goes right into chapter 12, we're going to go ahead with chapter 12. Who knows? Maybe we will finish this tonight. Chapter 12, verse 1. Creator, in the days of your youth, before the difficult, and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain. In the days when the keeper of the house trembles and the strong man bows down, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows grow dim, when the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of music are brought low, and also they are afraid of height and of terrors in the way, when the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden, and desire fails. For man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about in the streets. Remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. Wow. Very powerful poem at the end of this. What is he saying? Remember the Creator in the days of your youth. Remember, he just talked about the young man. He says, enjoy your life, young man, but realize dark days are coming. He says, before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. And it says, while the sun and the moon are not darkened and the clouds do not return after the rain. In other words, when you get older, it's going to be a darker time. The keepers of the house tremble. The strong man bows down. The grinders cease. And those who look through the windows grow dim. Solomon's basically discussing what happens in age when you're in the twilight of your life and you're looking at the world and it just doesn't provide that joy that it used to. And, you know, you're weaker. And what does it say? They're afraid of height. The terror's in the way. Desire fails. They shut the doors in the street. They can't hear well. They're startled at a bird. The man goes to his eternal home, and mourners go about the street. So he summarizes in verse 6, remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. These are all metaphorical statements of death. Because it says in verse 7, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. That's what's going to happen to all of us. So Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. Meaningless, meaningless, empty, useless, futile. Life on earth, if that's all you're living for, it's worthless. So there's a little summary from verse 9 to verse 14, and it's the end of chapter 12. And it's really the punchline of the whole book of Ecclesiastes. And the voice switches here. Instead of it being in the voice of Solomon, this is now a third party that's talking about the preacher, Solomon. Moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads, and the words of scholars are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And further, my son, be admonished by these. Of the making of many books, there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. But God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Wow. So in verse 9, you hear this third party say, the preacher was wise and he taught the people knowledge and he set in order proverbs and he wrote many words of truth. And then it says in verse 11, the words of the wise are like goads. A goad was a long stick, very often had metal on one end, and it was used to steer oxen when they were plowing, to kind of poke them and keep them going in the right direction. So the words of the wise are like that, to keep us going in the right direction. The words of scholars are like well-driven nails. You know, if you ever work with a hammer and nails, you know what happens sometimes when you don't drive the nails well and they bend. Do they hold the wood together well if they bend? Nope. A well-driven nail is one that goes straight in and has strength to it. And he says the words of scholars are like well-driven nails. And then it says, these words of the wise, the words of scholars, they're given by one shepherd. Well, that's kind of strange. What do scholars and nails have to do with a shepherd? Except what he's saying is that wisdom comes from one source, and that's God. And then he talks to his son. Furthermore, my son, be admonished by these. With the making of many books, there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. Every college student has probably memorized this verse at least once. But verse 13 is the summation. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. You know, in the King James Version, this reads, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And that's how I learned it originally. But then I noticed one day that the word duty was in italics in the King James. And of course, that means that wasn't in the original language, and it was added by the translator. So if you read it without that word, this is what it says. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man. This is man's all. This is his purpose. This is his meaning, to fear God and to keep his commandments. And then he explains why. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Wow, what a summation to a book of wisdom. Solomon said, I set out to find out what was important under the sun. And at the end of the day, he says, under the sun, the only thing that really matters, fear God and keep his commandments. Yes, enjoy the fruit of your labor. Yes, it's a great blessing to have a wife. It's a great blessing to have children and to even gain wealth and to be able to enjoy it. But being a workaholic or thinking that all you're going to get is pleasure and money and that's all that matters, you'll be ruined in your life. Yes, time and chance happen to everybody. All kinds of things happen to us and we can't predict the future. So what is the conclusion of the matter? Fear God and keep his commandments, because that's the reason you were created. That's your purpose. What a wonderful book. I've really enjoyed studying this with you, and we'll look forward to our next study together. But think about all the wisdom and everything that Solomon has taught us in this, that what really matters isn't the flesh and isn't this earth, but eternity. So we'll focus on that. Stephen?